12. The Stairway of the Gods. In the clear, cold atmosphere of Rama, the beam of the searchlight was completely invisible. 3 kilometers down from the central hub, the 100-meter-wide oval of light lay across a section of that colossal stairway. A brilliant oasis in the surrounding darkness, it was sweeping slowly toward the curved plain still 5 kilometers below, and in its center moved a trio of ant-like figures, casting long shadows before them. It had been, just as they had hoped and expected, a completely uneventful descent. They had paused briefly at the first platform, and Norton had walked a few 100 meters along the narrow, curving ledge before starting the slide down to the second level. Here they had discarded their oxygen gear and reveled in the strange luxury of being able to breathe without mechanical aids. Now they could explore in comfort, freed from the greatest danger that confronts a man in space, and forgetting all worries about suit integrity and oxygen reserve. By the time they had reached the 5th level, and there was only 1 more section to go, gravity had reached almost half its terrestrial value. Rama's centrifugal spin was at last exerting its real strength. They were surrendering themselves to the implacable force that rules every planet, and that can exert a merciless price for the smallest slip. It was still easy to go downward, but the thought of the return, up those thousands upon thousands of steps, was already beginning to prey upon their minds. The stairway had long ago ceased its vertiginous downward plunge and was now flattening out toward the horizontal. The gradient was now only about 1 in 5. At the beginning, it had been 5 in 1. Normal walking was now both physically and psychologically acceptable. Only the lowered gravity reminded them that they were not descending some great stairway on Earth. Norton had once visited the ruins of an Aztec temple, and the feelings he had then experienced now came echoing back to him, amplified 100 times. Here was the same sense of awe and mystery, and the sadness of the irrevocably vanished past. Yet the scale here was so much greater, both in time and in space, that the mind was unable to do it justice. After a while, it ceased to respond. Norton wondered if, sooner or later, he would take even Rama for granted. And there was another respect in which the parallel with terrestrial ruins failed completely. Rama was hundreds of times older than any structure that had survived on Earth, even the Great Pyramid. But everything looked absolutely new. There was no sign of wear and tear. Norton had puzzled over this a good deal, and had arrived at a tentative explanation. Everything that they had so far examined was part of an emergency backup system, seldom put to actual use. He could not imagine that the Ramans, unless they were physical fitness fanatics of the kind not uncommon on Earth, ever walked up and down this incredible stairway, or its 2 identical companions completing the invisible Y far above his head. Perhaps they had been required only during the actual construction of Rama, and had served no purpose since that distant day. That theory would do for the moment, yet it did not feel right. There was something wrong somewhere. They did not slide for the last kilometer, but went down the steps 2 at a time in long, gentle strides. This way, Norton decided, they would give more exercise to muscles that would soon have to be used. And so the end of the stairway came upon them almost unawares. Suddenly, there were no more steps, only a flat plain, dull gray in the now weakening beam of the hub searchlight, fading away into the darkness a few hundred meters ahead. Norton looked back along the beam, toward its source, up on the axis, more than 8 kilometers away. He knew that Mercer would be watching through the telescope, so he waved to him cheerfully. "Captain here," he reported over the radio. "Everyone in fine shape, no problems. Proceeding as planned." "Good," replied Mercer. "We'll be watching." There was a brief silence. Then a new voice cut in. "This is the exec on board ship. Really, Skipper, this isn't good enough. You know the news services have been screaming at us for the last week. I don't expect deathless prose, but can't you do better than that?" "I'll try," Norton said, chuckling. "But remember, there's nothing to see yet. It's like, well, being on a huge, darkened stage with a single spotlight. The first few hundred steps of the stairway rise out of it until they disappear into the darkness overhead. What we can see of the plane looks perfectly flat. The curvature's too small to be visible over this limited area, and that's about it." "Like to give any impressions?" "Well, it's still very cold, below freezing, and we're glad of our thermostats. And quiet, of course. Quieter than anything I've ever known on Earth, or in space, where there's always some background noise. Here, every sound is swallowed up. The space around us is so enormous that there aren't any echoes. It's weird, but I hope we'll get used to it." "Thanks, Skipper. Anyone else? Joe? Boris?" Joe Calvert, never at a loss for words, was happy to oblige.
"I can't help thinking that this is the first time, ever, that we've been able to walk on another world, breathing its natural atmosphere, though I suppose natural is hardly the word you can apply to a place like this. Still, Rama must resemble the world of its builders. Our own spaceships are all miniature Earths. 2 examples are damned poor statistics, but does this mean that all intelligent life forms are oxygen eaters? What we've seen of their work suggests that the Ramans were humanoid, though perhaps about 50% taller than we are. Wouldn't you agree, Boris?"
"Is Joe teasing Boris?" Norton asked himself. "I wonder how he's going to react." To all his shipmates, Lieutenant Boris Rodrigo was something of an enigma. The quiet, dignified communications officer was popular with the rest of the crew, but he never entered fully into their activities and always seemed a little apart, marching to the music of a different drummer. As indeed he was, being a devout member of the 5th Church of Christ, Cosmonaut. Norton had never been able to discover what had happened to the earlier 4, and he was equally in the dark about the church's rituals and ceremonies. But the main tenet of its faith was well known. Its members believed that Jesus Christ was a visitor from space, and an entire theology had been constructed on that assumption. It was perhaps not surprising that an unusually high proportion of the church's devotees worked in space in some capacity or other. Invariably, they were efficient, conscientious, and absolutely reliable. They were universally respected, and even liked, especially since they made no attempt to convert others. Yet there was also something slightly spooky about them. Norton could never understand how men with advanced scientific and technical training could possibly believe some of the things he had heard Cosmo Christers state as incontrovertible fact. As he waited for Boris to answer Joe's possibly loaded question, the commander had a sudden insight into his own hidden motives. He had chosen Rodrigo because he was physically fit, technically qualified, and completely dependable. At the same time, he wondered if some part of his mind had not selected the lieutenant out of an almost mischievous curiosity. How would a man with such religious beliefs react to the awesome reality of Rama. Suppose he encountered something that confounded his theology, or, for that matter, confirmed it. But Rodrigo, with his usual caution, refused to be drawn. They were certainly oxygen breathers, and they could be humanoid. But let's wait and see. With any luck, we should discover what they were like. There may be pictures, statues, perhaps even bodies over in those towns, if they are towns.
And the nearest is only 8 kilometers away, said Calvert, hopefully.
Yes, thought Norton, but it's also 8 kilometers back, and then there's that overwhelming stairway to climb again. Can we take the risk? A quick sortie to the town they had named Paris had been among the first of his contingency plans, and now he had to make his decision. They had ample food and water for a stay of 24 hours. They would always be in full view of the backup team on the hub, and any kind of accident seemed virtually impossible on this smooth, gently curving metal plane. The only foreseeable danger was exhaustion. When they got to Paris, which they could do easily enough, could they do more than take a few photographs and perhaps collect some small artifacts before they had to return? But even such a brief foray would be worth it. There was so little time as Rama hurtled sunward toward a perihelion too dangerous for Endeavor to match. In any case, part of the decision was not his to make. Up in the ship, Dr. Ernst would be watching the outputs of the biotelemetering sensors attached to his body. If she turned thumbs down, that would be that. Laura, what do you think?
Take 30 minutes rest and a 500-calorie energy module. Then you can start.
Thanks, Doc, interjected Calvert. Now I can die happy. I always wanted to see Paris. Montmartre, here we come.